Rashad Taylor has made me a better man.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good soundbite. We'll put that at the intro.
And then you can mute everything else I say.
Hello, friends. My name is Blue Mitchell.
And I'm Michael Kirchhoff. And these are
the Diffusion Tapes.
Welcome to the Diffusion Tapes, a podcast where we chat with artists, writers, and curators working in the field of artfully crafted photography. Produced and hosted by Blue Mitchell, publisher of Diffusion Annual and founder of 112 Publishing, co-hosted by Michael Kirchhoff, editor-in-chief at Analog Forever magazine and founder of Catalyst Interviews. In these conversations, we chat with folks whose fascinating work and intriguing life path arouse the senses. And we're inviting you into the conversation.
Feed me a line, Blue.
What's the word for feed me a line? What is it?
Cue me?
Cue me? Yeah, but there's a better word than cue. What is it?
Cue me up. Cue me up, bro. it's great that on a podcast we just have to like search for words because we don't know enough.
Right. What are we doing? It's like that one review, like, oh, you were great, Stu. I don't know about those other two.
Exactly. Just a couple of knuckleheads.
So today Michael and I are here and we are Michael's flexing. He's flexing over there. Sorry. Sorry y'all can't see that, but yeah. It's
not, I'm ready to talk.
He's ready to roll here. So who are we rolling with today, Michael?
You know what? Today we're rolling with a great photographer and a friend and a gentleman who I think we're going to be hearing from for a very long time. Mm. So my official introduction for Mr. Rashad Taylor is that Rashad's work addresses themes of race, culture, family, and legacy. And these images are a kind of family album filled with friends and family, birthdays, vacations, and everyday life. At the same time, these images tell you more than his family story, and they are actually a window onto the Black American experience. In addition, he has taught numerous workshops at Anderson Ranch Arts Center, as well as other venues around the country. And he's been invited to present lectures at Stanford University, George Washington University, Savannah College of Art and Design, Maine Media Workshops and College, among others. Like, the list, it's growing every day.
Yeah, and there might be some. There might be some that he's doing right now that we don't even have.
Yeah, by the time this comes out, the list will have double.
So I was kind of, I didn't really ask him how long he's been doing workshops, but it seems like he's relatively new to doing workshops. Is that true?
Yes.
So I mean, he's done quite a bit, I guess, considering the amount of time that he's been doing them.
True. And I think it's probably because, I mean, A, he's gotten very popular, but more importantly, he's just a natural at it. Mm. He's good, not just good at presenting his own work, but he's good at teaching and, you know, the whole thing between workshops and lectures. It seems to come very naturally to him. And I think that that's something that you're going to understand after listening to our talk with him. I've known about his work and him for a long time, and he's gotten wildly popular. And I feel like I can say I knew him when.
Mm, yeah, I love that. Well, I'm glad I got to meet him at the height here, because I feel like he's just going to skyrocket.
He is, and then he's not going to want to talk to either one
exactly.
of us.
Exactly,
yeah. Yeah, so. He's like too important. No, he's
and that's
like,
the, that's,
not that
yeah,
person
I was just going to say, and that's exactly who he's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's just get to know him a little more. Thank you all for joining us on the Diffusion Tapes, and let's just jump into our conversation with Rashad. there's no real formula to this. I just like to start by saying thank you for joining us. This is awesome. I'm pretty excited to meet you in person. I've been following your work for a while. And Michael and I, this is the first time him and I have done this whole thing together, but he's been an awesome co-host with me, and he's bringing a bunch of people that I don't know personally to the podcast, which is great for me, because that's the whole point of doing this, is about the community. So I'm excited about it. So anyways, thank you for joining.
Basically, we have a couple of lists. He has a list and I have a list of people that we want to have conversations with about photography. It often goes beyond that as well. It goes to personal life and things like day jobs and how you grew up and all that kind of stuff, right? It's not our photographic practice for the most part is wrapped up in our daily life and is it runs parallel to everything else we do, right? So, and honestly, your work is very personal and very astute. I'm trying to remember now, I think it was Little Black Boy I discovered on Instagram. I think you had joined Instagram. I think that's where I first...
Yeah, that's gotta be years ago, man.
I mean, I interviewed you for Analog Forever, what was that? Probably 2 or 3 years ago, I think.
2019.
Yeah, so I think I'd seen your work probably, I kind of want to say maybe a year before that, before I finally reached out. Since then, you've kind of blown up, right? Mm-hmm. Don't give me that. You've got gallery representation at two great galleries. And as far as I know, there's probably more on the way, but we'll get to that. And you're doing workshops, right?
Yeah. This year is a lot of workshops. So,
yeah. Well, what's that? What's it like kind of taking your practice on the road and teaching others?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. I think for me, I always enjoy showing others how to do stuff and teaching. It kind of you made a good point going back to the day job. That's essentially what I do. I recruit and develop insurance agents and financial advisors, right? So I really enjoy helping people succeed and be successful. So it definitely transitions into photography. So especially I would say with the wet plate collodion process for sure, because that's obviously really labor intensive and you just can't pick up a camera and say, hey, I'm going to do wet plate. Like it just doesn't work like that. unless you want to blow yourself up or something. So that one I really enjoy showing people new stuff. And then I do other workshops in terms of just portraiture and how to connect with people. Because obviously my work is about portraiture and people and family. So, again, going back to your point, Michael, I always want to give back. And I have had some success. So I think I get people ask me questions like, oh, well, how did you do this? Or what was the process like? So I enjoy just doing whatever I can just to help somebody else. Because it's not like it's proprietary or anything. I'm not special. It's just I worked hard. I tried to make work and hopefully people will like it. And kind of I'd like to tell people kind of what I did. And if it's hopefully they can grab something out of it and apply it to their own practice or their own business or life.
Well, it seems to be paying off. One of the things that I kind of wonder also is because you have the day job and you're creating your own work, you're part of the photographic community, and you're also raising a family. Like, it's always a question that I have for people, especially those who have families, and it goes for Blue as well. And I know juggling all of those things and time management becomes an issue. But I also wonder how do folks at the day job take what it is that you're doing? Are they supportive, or do they run into each other sometimes?
I would say supportive. I work at a great company and they're always supportive. And my friends and colleagues and mentors have always been excited about my artwork and encouraged me to continue to do that. Because think about it, ultimately, you don't work for a company, you work for a company, but you don't work for a company forever. So there's going to come a point where you're going to retire or stop working for the company, right? So you need to have some hobbies. You need to have something to do. So I think I've gotten a lot of support. quick story. We were at a market, like a recognition banquet. So I was publishing National Geographic, and somebody in leadership, they ended up like buying a whole bunch of copies, and they're like, Rashad, we need you to sign these. So they actually handed out the National Geographic. I handed out all like National Geographics to my colleagues, other managers in my market. So it was pretty cool. So just that's a testament to the culture that we have here and that people are supportive, which I mean, it's so appreciative because I know some people don't have that opportunity.
Yeah. Like you're a celebrity with them, really.
Yeah. Something like, yeah. What can I say? It hasn't hurt for sales. So I definitely have more people to ask if they want to buy my work.
Yeah, for sure. But I think it's interesting you say that because you wouldn't think those worlds would be connected. But I think it sounds like a lot of it actually is related, especially just gauging off our short time on the podcast and watching your YouTube channel and the videos I've seen with you. You can tell that you're about connection and education and like sharing knowledge. It sounds like that is actually what you do with your job as well. So it seems like it goes hand in hand.
For sure. Yeah. No one has a monopoly on knowledge nowadays. You can Google everything. So I don't know. And people before me have always been so forthright and giving that I feel that I should do the same thing. So
love it.
That's awesome. I think that there's another aspect to it is the way that you wear a dark cloth like a cape.
Oh, yeah. <That's>,
that gets you some notice.
Yeah, I'm a fool sometimes. So here's the thing, man. You've gotten to know me over the years a little bit. I honestly don't take myself very seriously at all. You can ask my wife. Life is too short to be just rigid, and I don't know, I just have to have fun, and I feel like people let loose when I come in the room and I try to just make it loose and light and fun, because it definitely helps, I think, with people opening up and feeling more comfortable in their own shoes if they know this guy, okay, he doesn't take himself that serious, maybe I can loosen up a little.
Right. Well, that's why I brought that up, because I do. You're a self-proclaimed photo nerd like the rest of us.
Oh yeah, man, I definitely am. We can talk about my roots. But I wanted to get back to, you said the balance part. So I know, Blue, you have a family too, correct?
Yeah. Two girls?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say, Michael, on that, I think a lot of it is just being intentional about art making and making sure that I have some time. It's not a ton, but like just trying to... And with my job, it's easier. Like I'm in that mindset. I have a type of job where I do calls from 9 to 10. I have meetings from this time to this time. So it made sense for me to just schedule art making in a way. So mm-hmm. I'm still limited, usually night weekends. And then I shoot mostly natural light, right? So I'm really only shooting Saturdays and Sundays. There's occasionally like holidays or if I take a day off or something like that, I can get the camera out. A lot of times I'm relegated to that. So I would say like the pandemic, I definitely had a higher volume of work just because I worked from home. So if I took 10 minutes or 15 minutes away to set up a picture, like it's okay because I'm not in the office. And I still got all my work done. But, you know, you just have that autonomy when you're at home. So we're all at home for 8-9 months. So that definitely helped. But going back to the point of, I think a lot of it is that. And then I think the second part is you make sacrifices, man. I can remember many a nights I was up at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning in my darkroom printing, just like old college times, because that was the time I had. And if I didn't get it done, then I just made time, even if it was late at night, to get what I needed to get done in terms of mostly the backside of analog photography. So most time, developing, printing, doing all that stuff, usually at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no obligations going on. Nobody's making demands of you, so you can... That's your free time. That's your me time.
Right? Me time. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. Getting a lot more done in the middle of the night.
Right. Because if you have kids, they go to bed at 8 or 7:30, and then I spend time with my wife. I love to spend... I get the privilege to spend time with
my wife.
That's
right.
Right.
And then it comes certain times, like, okay, well, I'm going to go off and... go in my dark room or get on the computer or scan. So my wife is very supportive. So we have a great relationship because I told her up front, hey, photography is my thing. It's like my side chick. So
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, just so you know.
So she just can't get jealous now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Put the cards on the table.
For sure.
I don't have that rigid schedule of, like, work time. There's no time clock. There's no obligation to be anywhere on a daily mm-hmm. basis at the same time every day. Or, like, I've had a kind of a freelance life pretty much almost all of my life. So,
wow.
But it sounds freeing, but it's actually not. It's mm-hmm. not, because you don't ever have a complete handle on your schedule. Things are always in flux and always random. And like right. you said, you can set aside some me time. I have to search for it, and I have to kind of work off the cuff and find the time or make the time to do the things that are most important. Prioritizing is an issue with me. So
right, yeah.
What's urgent? I don't have kids. So, but you know, one of the things that I think that's one of the things that drew me to your work, though, because I think that it's twofold. It's privilege versus the Black experience and fatherhood. And I know that your body of work, Little Black Boy, absorbing that work was an eye-opening experience for me, because I'll be honest, I have a bunch of friends who are white, and they will always say, well, not everything was handed to me. I didn't grow up privileged and everything. But I always think, well, there was probably a whole lot of privilege that you just didn't know about.
Right.
And I think, hearing them say those things over and over again always made me realize that. But again, going back to your work, absorbing it in a way where you related it to your role as a father. There were fears that you had and hopes that you have for him. And in the photographs, I think that experience really comes through. And I think that it helped. I know that it helped educate me further. And I can only mm-hmm. imagine how it's probably educated a lot of other people further as well. Did the body of work start out with that intention? Or were you merely documenting? He's your son, right? And
yeah,
and your wife appears, your father appears in the work.
Yeah.
It's very reportage style, but you're doing it with a view camera and you're documenting your family in a very personal way.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think 1.2, when you say reportage, I don't know if you knew this, but I came up in photography working for the high school newspaper and the yearbook. So I've always had that type of eye. And then I also worked at the college. So at Murray State University, I worked for the Murray State News as a photographer. And then I also, while I was in school, was studying art. So I was really weird, because usually you're either photojournalism or you're art or fine art. And I was both, because my job and to make money, I worked at the newspaper, but then I was studying art. So I think I mix in a lot of that in terms of the work, right, Michael? So when I started it, you're 100% right. I'm a new dad and excited. And my wife and I had our son, and I wanted to document his life, just like any photographer, dad, mom, whoever would do. I just so happened to be a photographer. And I think for me, it was just making the images. And then I think it really, probably once he turned, I don't know, like 3 or 4, I looked back at the work and I looked at different themes that were going on. So there's one image in particular that comes to mind. I don't know if it's on my website or not, but it's a picture of LJ. He has this Believe shirt or something, or Dream Big. That's what it was. Dream Big. And then he had a police sticker on. And then, like, in the background, there's this little girl. You can't see her face. You just see her hair. And I was just like, man, this is interesting. With the shirt, Dream Big, and then he wants to be a policeman, and just obviously that correlation and relationship with people of color and the police. And then there's this little white girl in the background. I was like, oh, that's some interesting things going on. So I don't know. So I looked at that and just how they interacted, and I'm like, okay, well, let me see how far I can take this, because I think images like that can say a lot. It just so happened it was just in the moment, right? Just photojournalistic, right? But over time, I wanted to develop that a little bit more to actually be more intentional and cognizant of what I wanted to say and convey. So mm-hmm. then I think it was an evolution. So I started with 35, then I started shooting large medium format. And I was like, crap, like, I guess I got to go back. I got to go big. I got to go to large format. Because I shot a little bit of large format in college and then also some after. So I think the images changing formats helped me go through my process. I made it more formal. I formalized it a little bit more, mm-hmm. more intentional, because shooting large format, it takes time. I mean, it takes some time. You're making a picture every four or five minutes rather than mm-hmm. snap. So for me, I wanted to take my time as I stage the images, but at the same time, I wanted the images to look like they were happening in a way, right? And they were just these moments that we all have in some capacity in our lives in terms of childhood. And then from my perspective, fatherhood, my dad's perspective, him being a grandparent. So that's how it started, man.
Yeah. It's wonderful that you work your father into it as well. The generational aspect of the work, I think, is pretty important as well, because the feelings that you have for your son were the same feelings that he had for you. And now he's seeing that be passed on and applied and then documented by you. Like, how does he feel about the work?
Oh, they love it. They don't mind being photographed. Mm-hmm. My dad, and I made some pictures of my mom. I don't know if I've really shared any of those yet, but yeah, I think it's been great. They've always been supportive, so they're just like, whatever you want to do.
Right.
They'll do it, right? Especially, yeah, so they'll just do that. But yeah, it's definitely a special time. I think for me, like, legacy is important. You know, this idea of what you leave behind, and then especially someone having kids, you get to the end of life and people get all, you know, obsessed with making money and having stuff. And it's, at the end of the day, you're just going back to the dirt, man. So for me, it's, I think about what am I leaving in the earth that's going to live past me. So obviously the big thing for people who have kids and families, your children, right? So what are you instilling in them? What are you teaching them? What are they gleaming or learning from you, whether you teach them or not, by just they watch you and they mm-hmm. mimic the things they see. So that's important to me. That's in the work, and just like that legacy that I hope to leave and incorporate in my father, because he taught me a tremendous amount about life and faith and family and just how to be a man. So it's coming back full circle. But it is interesting. I'll tell you this. No, the relationship with grandparents and grandkids. I don't know, Blue, I don't know if your parents are still living or not, but
yeah, they are.
Great. And it's really interesting because grandkids get away with everything, man. And I think about my childhood, and then I had a good relationship with my grandparents, but they lived out 2 hours away, so we didn't see them all the time. But I lived in the same city as my parents. So they would get LJ all the time. And we drop him off over there. He'd spend the night. And then LJ, Papa gave me ice cream for breakfast. I'm like, what are we doing, man? Ice cream for breakfast? That's how we roll? Okay.
Like, I didn't get ice cream for breakfast. What's going
right,
on?
Right. Exactly. But that dynamic, that relationship with grandparents and their grandkids is really interesting, because it's almost like they can do everything they wanted to do with you and be lenient and just hang out, be the cool grand, but then not have that. Of course, my parents, you know, have discipline for him, right? But they just give him back. Hey, it's your kid. You deal with him. So it's like you get the best of everything. Like, I can just, we can go out, have fun, hang out. And then when you do bad stuff, your parents will deal with you.
Right. Now that he's all sugared up, you can have him back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Totally. Well, I think it's great that you incorporate your family into the photography. And I also think your choice of doing large format, I mean, that, as you said, it slows things down. Everything has to be much more intentional. And I always think of a large format as like a, it's like an event or an experience. So you're not just out there just capturing stuff. It's like you got to set up, you got to find the right light. And kudos to you for using your son, because I know, I'm sure he's not just sitting around waiting for you all the time.
No, not at all.
He's got to be on the move. So to have the patience with the family and stuff and to set things up, I think it involves them more than just taking a photo of them, because they have to be a part of the process. And I think that's pretty profound in a lot of ways. And I feel like I might be a little biased, but I can feel like I can see it in the work when I'm looking at it, that connection and the to the process, not just to the family, but to the process itself, as as a photograph. I love it. Yeah. It's great.
Thanks. Yeah. Sometimes I struggle. Sometimes, like, I think, when was it? So I just got back from Hawaii, just for, literally to celebrate my sister's 30th birthday. Mm. It literally was like a 72-hour trip. So I had a work trip right beforehand that I went to that was great. And then, like, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go and celebrate my sister. So I thought about you, Michael, because I flew through LAX. Didn't stay there long, but it was 72 hours. But then I had all my gear, so I brought all my large format gear. So, you guys know, traveling in the States with film is not only nerve-wracking. I still get anxious. Like, oh, man, I'm gonna mess this up. And even though we live in the United States, TSA does a great job. I've never had any issues, but sometimes it is a conversation to make sure they don't open your film. Because sometimes with sheet film, they're like, what's this? Mm-hmm. Sheet film, don't open it. So I write on there, do not open.
Especially sheet film.
Well, right. They
have no idea.
Yeah.
What exactly. <is this? laughs> Exactly. And everything. I mean, obviously, I always request hand check and get there early. But going back to your point, Blue, it's a sacrifice. Trust me. Like, sometimes back in my head, I'm like, oh my God, if I just get a camera digital, I don't got to worry about all this stuff. Like, I literally think, oh my gosh, this is. But I'm committed, though, to the process and everything that goes with it, the good and the bad, right? To get that final image, because it's some work to get that. I just connected with that part because I literally was just getting off a plane this past Monday or Tuesday about.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Traveling with film is always like an issue, but it's actually not so bad in the States because you can't ask for a hand check. As soon as you leave the country, though, like all bets are off.
And I did have and that's another story. So I was in DR. So last year we went to Dominican Republic. My wife's family's from there. And this time my family was there, but my wife and son were staying for a month. So now I got to go back and work. So like on the way back, so I told my wife, hey, honey, can you write in Spanish? Do not open sensitive. So she did that. And usually when I go international to DR, I'm with her and she obviously speaks Spanish. And so we're good, but she wasn't with me. Mm. And these guys, I swear, I was in that. It took about 15, 20 minutes, man. So these guys, I was like, in the best Spanish I had, or no, open, no, don't just film. I'm like professional photographer. I wish I had an ID that said I'm a photographer or something.
Yeah.
But it was just crazy because I literally tried to open it. So I was so glad I had it taped shut. I had everything taped up pretty well. And I was like, don't open. I was like, please. I was like begging them. And they didn't. But going back to your point, Michael, I mean, international as a whole, all bets are off. Like, I have looked into just, like, mailing stuff if I can. Mm. And even that's a risk because I've mailed stuff to other countries and it never gets there sometimes.
Yeah. Or getting it processed and while you're there as well. And if you can come back with processed film, you're fine. But
right.
Yeah. But that's more time, energy, money, all of it. So, but yeah, people look at the box and they're like, film's not in a box. Which are you crazy? Film comes in those little canisters.
Right.
It's supposed to be in a roll.
Yeah, there were little rolls. My grandfather used to shoot those things.
Right. Right, exactly.
Nobody uses film anymore. Yeah, it's funny. I've been a couple of places where I've gotten out of having to have my film scanned because, like the cameras that you bring, they're like, what are these? This isn't.
Right.
You and your old-timey camera over there, like, I don't understand why you would still use that, or can you even still use that? So there have been a couple of times I've been out of the country, and they're so enamored and curious about the camera that they forget to even x-ray anything. I just take stuff out. I just automatically take stuff out. I'm like, everything's an open book.
Right.
Here it is. This is what I got. And they're all like, oh my God, what is that? I want to know all about it. Where's the screen to look at the picture?
Right.
And I'm like, no batteries in the screen, nothing.
Where's the screen? I love
it. So sometimes you can work it in your favor. But there's always like a song and dance you have to go through.
Yeah, I still get surprising reactions with my SX70 Polaroid, which you would think people would understand, and they've seen a bazillion of them. But I still get those reactions like, oh, you have an old camera.
I didn't know they still made that.
Right, yeah.
So do you, and then I would imagine, have you had to do much traveling with chemistry for doing like collodion and everything, like doing a workshop? Is that a whole nother
That's a whole nother beast. So yeah, none of that stuff you can fly with. So I either have to mail, I have to mail it out ahead, or drop ship it from my providers to wherever I'm going, or I just drive. So when I shot the stuff for Nat Geo, I drove from Illinois to Georgia.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, web plate is not, you automatically cannot fly, basically.
You can check it.
Now, I can obviously bring the camera and the equipment, but the chemistry part, you're out of luck. So either I'll drive, or depending where I'm doing it, like ideally if I do a workshop. So for instance, I do one at Anderson Ranch. So they order all the stuff for me. I just tell them exactly what I need. And I get there a day early, or they help, or I'll coach them through how to mix like one or two things that I need. And then I'll cook. First day I get there, I mix everything and test it. And yeah, so it works. Workshops are not bad because I can get things sourced and done. I haven't photographed internationally with wet plate, which I would love to do at some point. But that's a lot more logistics that I have to kind of figure out and really have some support in terms of wet plate artists, like where I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think, if you had like a contact in wherever you were headed, you know, somebody who also practiced wet plate.
Right, that's how it's like,
I got you here.
So how often do you do the workshops?
So wet plate. So honestly, the workshops, a couple. So I have a few workshops scheduled that I'm doing on my own here in Springfield, Missouri. Mm-hmm. And then right now, the only wet plate workshop that I've done in the past was at Anderson Ranch. Mm-hmm. So that's my thing there. Like I've just done the wet plate there. But I mean, always open to do workshops wherever, whether it's at established organization or if I just run it on my own.
Sure.
Do you also do them for like portraiture or just large
format? Good question. So yeah, back in a few years ago, I did a lot more of it. I would do just like tent type days. So I have friends that would let me use their studio space or storefront, and I would just have it open to the community where, hey, I'm doing, come and get your tent type made 4x5 or 8x10. And then I would just make them on the spot and sell them. Like just of like people and their families or pets or whatnot. I haven't done too many pets. It's a little tricky unless I have myself with me.
Yeah, I would think so.
Unless they're dead. Taxidermy.
Right. Taxidermy. With the wet plate process, I have strobes. So strobes will let me freeze anything. So as long as the dog or cat just sits still for at least an instant, like a second, I can catch it.
Sure, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I've already tried to sell him my old strobes.
I'm sorry. Yeah, man. It's funny because I actually had to dust off my other ones because I got some stuff coming up that I'm going to have to need them.
If you ever need them nearby, you can use them for free. So
I appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah. I'll just have a workshop. I have a workshop in LA, man. I've never been out to LA. Just fly through.
We're just a fly-through state, huh?
Well, you need to set him up, Michael. Get a workshop going.
That's the second ding on California he's laid on me.
Well, I know. I do sound like anti. So here's the thing. California is a great state. I just don't choose to live there. But I would love to visit. And I have lots of friends like you, Michael, that live there. My dealer, she moved down to San Diego, so that's another excuse to get down there. And yeah, we got to make it happen one of these days.
Actually, that's Jennifer DiCarlo, correct?
Yep, Jen. Yep.
So she splits her time between San Diego and I think isn't
it was she was in Oregon. Yep, she was in Oregon, and
she was in Oregon, so she's back to San Diego then. I keep losing.
She's
track.
Between. Yeah, she's between. And sorry, I don't know if that's announced or not, but yeah, I think she's in San Diego now. It's all good. This won't come out tomorrow, so we're good. But yeah, she's in San Diego now.
And she's great. And actually, you're the other Jennifer.
Yeah, I have two dealers and they're both named, their names are both Jennifer. So
that's funny.
That's always interesting. Yeah, Jennifer, Jen.
Yeah, which one are you going to talk about today? So
right.
How'd you get hooked up with Obscura anyway?
Yeah, so Jennifer, she actually just, for Obscura, she just reached out. Honestly, I think it was just a cold email, if I remember right. She might correct me later if I'm wrong, but yeah, I think it was just a cold email.
No, you're right, because we also had her on the podcast, and she said the same thing. Yep.
So, oh, you did have her? Yeah, oh, that's
great. It checks out.
Woo. Fact check me, man.
That's why we were asking.
I never purposely tried to give untruths, but yeah, she, and obviously I asked around about her, and Michael spoke highly of her, so I'm like, love to hang out. And I ended up, she had a show for me in New Mexico, and that was my first time going to New Mexico. My wife and I drove. Yeah, I'm like a road warrior, man. So I drove from Missouri to New Mexico, and we just did it for a weekend. So I drove. Like, I think I took like Friday off or something, or Friday and Monday. But like we drove. I think it's like it was just like 11 hours, something like that. It wasn't terrible.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
11 hours, and then the hour. Yeah, so 11 hours or so.
Yeah, I've driven to Santa Fe from Los Angeles in a day before.
Okay. Yeah, Santa Fe's.
I think it's longer, but yeah. But also, I have no problem driving for extended periods of time.
I'm going to put that in here. Santa Fe. I'm going to do it right now.
I forget how long it took me. I was going to say 14, 15 hours, something like that.
Did you go straight through? Or did you stop?
Yeah.
Straight through.
Oh, man. Did you stop? Oh, no. Actually, guys, no. It's 12 hours. So I guess it was 12 hours and 56 minutes. Now, I think that might add. I don't know if that adds in the hour. But no, you could lose an hour. So, yeah, it's a legit 12-hour crap.
It's your time. Yeah. Look, wow. He's fact-checking us.
812. So from where I'm at now in Springfield, it's 812 miles. So it says 12 hours and 56 minutes. So if Jennifer's listening to this, I can be there in 12 hours and 56 minutes.
There you go.
Nice.
But yeah, we rode straight through. I do all the driving. My wife just rides, so.
Well, when we were talking to Jennifer, your work was still on the walls at the time.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Oh, yeah. Nice.
So your name came up during that.
Got it.
You can listen to what she says about you, or what we all say about you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's actually it's the next one. It'll come out next. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Okay. Yeah. Oh, great.
Next week? No, week after next.
I don't know time.
I've already forgotten.
I don't know what time is. What's time?
I'm looking forward to that. Then I'm looking forward to that. No, she's great. She's amazing. She hosted my wife and I, and it was just a great time. Mm. We hung out and kicked it, so it was fun.
Yeah, she's okay.
She's amazing.
Yeah,
there you go. She sells a lot of my artwork, so I love her.
That's the perfect soundbite right there.
Yeah, both Jennifers. they do an amazing job, because I know I don't have the time to do it.
Well, although I have to say, and this is actually a point that she brought up about you, or actually about photographers that she likes to represent and the relationship that is developed between the gallery director and the photographer or art maker. And that's that you have a really great handle on your social media. You can really, if a visit to your Instagram
it's pretty wild.
It's really slick. Like you have little videos that you're perfectly edited and graphics and logos.
I'm about to give you guys a secret. You're so comfortable. I'm about to give you a secret. You guys ready? Everybody
else? Yeah.
Ready? Right. Wait, I'm going to sit down.
Okay. there's a certain point in terms, I'm trying to think when I started, but I work with someone that helps me. How about we say that? I work with someone that. So here's the thing, though. We try to blend it where people don't necessarily know if it's me or him, which is a good thing. So, like, I have a video out there of me, like, with this, like, parka hat, like, fur hat. Like, obviously, that's all me.
I've seen it, yeah.
I try to integrate that. So, the thing with him is that we collaborate together in terms of post. Like, he knows all this SEO stuff and the YouTube. Like, I don't know. I know about that stuff, but I don't. I'm really focused on kind of just the art making, the audience, getting people's attention, and he helps with everything else. So, yeah, I mean, I use him to help me. So, I wouldn't say it's all me. It's definitely... You know, I outsource a little bit.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, we all have to a certain
degree. Right. Now, yeah.
But you're really good. But you've chosen the right person because he's very good at it. And
right.
But it's not all him. It's you as well. You're very comfortable on camera. Right. You're really good at getting your point across. And I think that probably also speaks to how well received your workshops probably are.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, I would say that. And I would say with that in mind, I do try to, I just kind of talk about the work, talk about what's going on in my life, try to just be as real as possible. So No, I appreciate that. He'll get a kick out of it. So Ken Jansen, Downpour, I'm giving him a plug.
Nice.
He's a great, great to work with.
We'll put him in the show notes.
Yeah, put him in. Yeah, Downpour. I think it's called Downpour.
Email me his name or link or
something. Yeah,
I'll add that in there for sure.
He does. Yeah. He does good work. But obviously, all the work is the pictures are mine. And I think, and actually, getting off topic, but he's kind of opened my eyes a little bit more because we collaborate, and I'm trying to break into the NFT space. And he's and he did. He helped me do this animation. I was like, oh my dude, that's so dope. I think I could make a NFT that looks like that moves. So we just bounce ideas off each other, and he's great at what he does. But I would say also another reason why I'm incorporating video, and it's Instagram's fault. Another secret here, guys. Like, you can get paid by posting on Instagram. Those reels, man. I won't tell anybody my secrets, but if they just pay you for doing that stuff. So
right.
I think it opened my eyes too, because I'm into business. I help people run businesses for a living, right? So when opportunities like that come up, I think you, as an artist, you got to take advantage of it, because I think that's probably a place that artists tend to not be as well-versed or educated or skillful in is the business side. So it's like, which I wouldn't expect the artist to be an amazing business owner at all, because you're an artist, you're good at making art and connecting with your audience. So when you see opportunities like that, I think it's definitely great to leverage them.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I've known a lot of photographers out there who were not very good at that, at their craft, but they were excellent, excellent business people. So made up for it. But then there are other people who are amazing artists who have no business sense whatsoever. But then you find somebody to help you. And
right.
It's you about, make that a collaboration.
And it's about leveraging, right?
Yeah. I mean,
that's a principle that everyone can. You either leverage your own time, effort, skills, or you leverage someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Sure. And again, going back to the relationship with the gallery, your gallery directors are going to love that part about you as well, because you're great at promotion and marketing, and that's going to help the process of selling your work. So.
Right. No, yeah. And I still struggle too. I still sometimes, I know you said I'm good on camera, but sometimes I just like think, like, what am I going to post today? Because I always feel like people, I don't think I'm that important. So when I post stuff, I'm like, this is stupid. Who's going to look at this? I don't know. Sometimes it's just a self-talk. Sometimes it's bad, but I'm trying to get over and get better at just put it out there, whatever.
Yeah. But, or you think you're starting to repeat yourself too sometimes.
Right.
I think I already did this, but man, I'll just do it again. But that's okay at the same time. That's
I think
fine.
The key, what I see, Rashad, is this authenticity. So it doesn't even matter to the viewer, even if the content is repeat, is that you're being authentic. And I think people appreciate that, and they see it in your work, and they see it in what you do for your own marketing. I think that comes through a lot. I think that's why people respect certain people is because they're not faking it. You know, like they're being real.
I
want to see people being real. Otherwise, I'm not interested. You know what I mean?
So I told you I went to Hawaii this past weekend. I did some weird marketing things where I'm videotaping myself and talking about my web play class, even though it has nothing to do with Hawaii. But I'm like, hey, I'm in Hawaii. I might as well.
Love it.
Take advantage of it. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, it was pretty scenery, and my sister was there. We're celebrating her 30th. I got a little testimonial from her, like, hey, guys, take my brother's web play class.
Nice.
Like, it's going to be life-changing.
Yeah, there we go. Love it.
Well, and that's what's funny, too, is also because I had you, in during the scheduling of this podcast, we had a delay, and we knew that you were going to be taken off to Hawaii, and I think it was while you were there is you were posting the videos of you with the furry hat.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Like, what is going on?
He's in Hawaii. He's not out in the tundra.
Right. So, well, here's the thing. So, here's my schedule. It was crazy because I was blessed enough to be able to have a trip for work that we went up to Minnesota. We went ice fishing. So,
is that where you were? Okay.
Yeah. So, I literally went ice fishing and then got back. And then the next day I had to fly out.
Oh, wow.
Got it. Okay.
So that's kind of how it works. So I'm always on the delay when you post. You got to be on the delay.
Yeah,
you can't let people know your movements. You know what I mean? Like, you got to wait a couple days and then you post it, right?
I agree. Yeah. Never let them know where you're really at.
Exactly.
Because they'll come and find you.
Right. Unless it's a pad or I'm at some, hey, I need you guys to come down and buy some prints.
Yeah.
I'm here now.
If I need people.
That's great.
You have another question?
I do. I want to go back to the one question I had, and I think I probably know the answer, but we were talking about your series, Little Black Boy, and how you incorporate your family, and then your father's involved, and of course your kid. And I was just thinking, how much of that work, how much of yourself are you putting into, like, when you see your son, are you feeling like these are self-portraits as much as they are portraits of him? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. 100%. It's about, the images are about him. And there's a lot of layers to that, too. So I would say, obviously, every portrait that photographers make has a little bit of themselves in it. I definitely believe that. And for this series, I definitely see that just my presence and my kind of touches in a lot of, obviously, all the portraits that I make. But I do see myself. I guess in my mind, I always go back to when I was his age and when I was a kid and what I did. And obviously, I see that in him because he's my son. I think that a part of me is definitely in every picture, both literally and figuratively, because he's my son, right? And then also figuratively, because I think that it goes to a place where I'm just expressing my feelings and who I am and what I'm about. And then also, I guess the layering is that they're still at the same time universal in a way. We're talking about the Black experience, but then also talking about the Black experience in a way that other people can engage with. Whether you're white, Black, Hispanic, whatever, you can engage with some of the images because you've probably felt that way or at least know someone who's felt that way, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's a lot of levels to it. But going back to your question, for sure, I agree. It's a self-portrait of me too. And then also thinking about getting older and aging. And I think about those things and think about what's going to happen when I'm gone. Mm-hmm. So
you're too young to be thinking about that so far. You know?
Like, oh, I know. Man, hey, you forget. In a former life, I used to sell life insurance. I used to sell I was a life insurance salesman. Now I teach other people how to sell life insurance, so it's great. But yeah, I mean, it came from some of that, and then I was just brought up, like, in terms of thinking about, we just have a finite, we just have a limited amount of time, right? And I guess I was just brought up in terms of thinking through what your purpose in life and how are you going to make a difference and the mark you leave. And those are things that I think through. And that's probably a part of why I talk like that, because that is important. And I do think about those things because, you know, everything else will fade away.
Well, doesn't that go hand in hand with having children too? Like, you suddenly, there's this new life that you've provided. So you think about when you were that young and how your father had to take care of you and worry about your future. Now you're doing the same. You're doing the same thing, right? So what are you going to leave for your son? And the same thing goes for your wife, I'm sure.
Yeah, I guess I go back to the other point with, like, my father. And I just see it's almost like you see this circle of life and you see, in one vein, history repeating itself, but in another vein, you see how it transitions and it deviates based on the decisions and things that I do. So yeah, it's interesting. And I do like to incorporate him and LJ, because that's part of the experience. Because a lot of my friends and family and colleagues, a lot of their grandparents were a big part of their life growing up, whether just by necessity, where their parents may not have been there, or their mom, or just because their parents were in the same place and that was just a thing. But you see that, and you see sometimes grandparents raising kids too. Mm. And that's something to walk through with the work too.
Yeah. Well, it takes a village. That's how I feel about it.
You know, there you go. You know that's a good clue. Yeah, it takes a village for sure.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think, and again, we see that in your work. It's definitely, you're viewed as a very strong family circle. You're a family unit that relies on one another.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Like you said, like, you have no problem being supportive in any way that you can for your wife. And I'm sure that you feel that way with anybody in your family. I think anybody would. I like to see that as well. And there's probably another reason why I'm drawn to your work. When I was growing up, I didn't have, my grandparents had all passed away before I was born. So I never had grandparents. And I always, my family's, I can't say we're not close, but we're not as close as most families, I think. We're a little bit disjointed to a certain degree. And I always think that if there had been even just one grandparent in the mix when I was growing up, mm-hmm. it would have changed that dynamic drastically. And it really would have strengthened everything.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I'm blessed, and my son is blessed that his grandparents are such a big part of his life. Even though now we do live about 6 hours away, but they're still a part of it. We still visit each other.
Yeah.
Do those things. So no, I think the other thing I think about too, I think someone had said about my work, I can't remember who, but just, and I thought about it more, it was just the fact of presence. So I think of that, Mike, when you said that about your grandparents not necessarily being there because they had passed away, just, I think someone was talking about like just the presence, that the fact that I'm a father and I am present with my family.
Yeah.
How that speaks volumes. Even just the act of making photographs of my family shows that I'm there, right? And just how that idea of being there, spending time, is such a big deal too. Even though I just think, oh, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. But it's just unfortunate because I know a lot of people didn't have that privilege, or their parents, their father wasn't there, and their mother wasn't there. And I just think about how fortunate I am that I can share that with I can be there for my son and my wife. So that thought is in there, even though I didn't think about it till later. And I'm like, oh, wow, that is true. That's a good one. Let me throw that in the old artist statement.
Well, what's great about that is the photos, objects, your photos, the literal objects are the proof of that, too. That's the proof that you were present and you are present. You know what I mean?
Very much right. So.
And that's obviously part of the whole deal, right? That's that's part of the reason why I'm making the work, because I feel that, especially Black men, we don't get credit for that, because all you hear is how we're not there, even though 8 or 9 times out of 10, with a lot of people that I know, they did have a dad that was there. So I don't think society has a great subset of data that just assumes, like, people just assume, oh, well, no Black father's there. But no, we are. Right. We just don't hear about it. And I think for me, I wanted to highlight just that dynamic of what it looks like. Because for me, I don't know any different, because my father was already there. It was always there. But my friends don't necessarily have that same experience. So I want to give people, obviously through my own perspective, what that experience for me is like, in hopes that they can gravitate to something in it, or feel something, or identify with something that was shared in the images.
Absolutely. It's a very profound statement to be making work the way that you are, and proving that point.
Thanks. Yeah.
So, and actually, we brought up your son a few times now. Does he have an interest in photography? Has he picked that up?
He likes to play. Well, okay. So it goes two ways. So in the way we make images, like, he's either in it or not. So a lot of times as he gets older now, it's, I'm not doing that. I'm like, okay, cool, that's fine. And then I have to sometimes put my salesman hat on and say, hey, I can take you to McDonald's
if you need
a couple pictures. Oh, McDonald's, yeah. I'm like, yeah. So McDonald's still works, even at 7 years old. It still works. It's still good. I have been having to get more creative, though, because I think it comes from his mom, because she, like, I'm in sales, but, like, she's the real negotiator. If you tell her no, like, she's going to find another 5 ways to ask you so you can say no again and again and again. So he has picked that up very well. And so I'll give you an example. So, like, he would be – I can't remember where we were. We're probably at home. And I was like, hey, what do you want for your birthday or something? I want some Bitcoin. I want money. What are you talking about, dude? Like, but I'm in the crypto space a little bit. But no, he kind of got that from me. But he, like, whenever you have interactions, he's always thinking, like, a step ahead. And I say no, he's always challenging me. So part of me as a parent, no, you're not going to challenge me, little dude. This is what's up. Like, I'm your father. But then part of me is, oh, okay, this is actually good. Let's see how I can cultivate this and have a teaching moment. Because in life, people get told no all the time. And then I feel like, they don't know how to deal with it. Or if they have a challenge, if something gets hard, you're like, oh, well, I just give up. Like this dude, like he's not giving up. If he wants to figure something out, he is. Or if he wants to play a video game, he's going to figure out a way to say, hey, Danny, what if I get a good grade on my math test? Can I play the video game? Like, oh, he's smart little dude.
Yeah, negotiation. Yeah.
Exactly. So he gets all that from his mother.
Right. You know what you can offer? Ice cream for breakfast.
Yes. I just like being back at home with Nana and Papa. Just ice cream, Skittles, gummy worms. Well, you can just have it all.
Yeah.
I've learned it.
Right. So, yeah. So, it's a negotiation, but I he does enjoy seeing himself, like, in print. Because I showed him I was in, like, Shots magazine, and it was a big picture of him, like, double-page spread. He's, oh, wow. He's, Daddy, I'm famous. I'm like, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
I'm like, he is.
You keep letting me make pictures of you, you're going to be even more famous. He's, oh, wow, really? More famous? Yeah, man. You could be more famous. You could be like that YouTube. Oh, God. So this is YouTube guy, kid. God, what is his name? He sells these toys, and oh, my gosh, I can't think of his name. It's like Danny or... He says he wants to be like him. Like, yeah, I would like to be. I want you to be like him too, because I heard he made $26 million last year. So let's be like him. Let's be more like him, and Daddy can retire early.
That's a good role model,
right? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that name is going to escape me. I can't remember the kid's name, but I mean, he's got like toys in Target. But anyway, yeah, it's definitely a collaboration. Now, I will say, last point is that he definitely now has taking a little bit more of a liking in terms of the collaboration, in terms of, oh, well, let me take the picture. So, and some of the work I'm going to be showing that I made last year, some of the stuff I'm going to release of him actually making a, there's one image of him making a self-portrait. So that's right. Cool. But no, honestly, he's kind of in photography a little bit, but honestly, he's really more into like video games. And literally today in the car, he's like, hey, I need you guys to sign me up for coding camp. I want to go to coding camp. Okay. Because he wants to be a video game designer. Yeah. I was like, hey, whatever floats your boat, dude, whatever you're passionate about, we'll try it. And I'm not going to try 50 million things, but we can try. So we tried basketball, definitely doesn't like that. We tried football, definitely doesn't like that. And that kind of hurt my heart because I was a football player growing up. It hurt me bad. I'm like, really, son? You sure you don't want to try? And he's 7 years old and like 80 pounds. Like, he's a big boy.
Right.
Like, when he plays soccer, I'm like, dude, you're running people over, dude. But yeah, he didn't want football. So no, we're trying to see what he's really into, but he's definitely into building things and into coding. So he's gonna either be I think a video game designer when he grows up, or a YouTube star, or I think a firefighter or something. So
yeah. Or all three.
Nice. Or all three.
All,
yeah,
all three. I mean, yeah.
Or crypto millionaire, who knows. He's just buy me Bitcoin. I'm like, all right, cool, I'll do it.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
Okay, if you can answer this in 2 minutes,
I'll be short-winded. I'm ready.
Well, Mr. Taylor, so where does the inspiration come from? Like, who's inspiring you, or what's inspiring you? Is there something specific? It doesn't even have to be photography related.
I go back. So I had a phase, I would say within probably the last 5 to 6 years, I've honestly, just going back to another point that you made, Michael, before about legacy and things like that, like I'm just overall like a driven person. And I think for me, I'm driven by making work that's important and that means something. Obviously more so first and foremost for myself, but like I've found that art can make an impact. And I'm just really driven to make as much meaningful work that I can while I'm here. That's kind of what drives me right now. Mm-hmm. And I think those things change over time sometimes, but I guess a core value is just making important things that I care about. And then I think that I care about first and foremost, and then obviously it's icing on the cake if other people care about it. And really just changing the narrative on the Black American experience and family experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then for me, like, also the icing on the cake is when I'm in some permanent collections. Right. Mm. So that's really, wow, this is happening. This is meaningful because that's going to live on. Right.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah. I guess that really inspires me. My son, my family inspire me to do more and be better. And obviously I'm inspired by a lot of the old time greats, the Gordon Parkses, the Richard Avedon's, the Sally Mann's. Mm-hmm. I always glean inspiration from them.
Sure.
Just in terms of art making and things. So.
Excellent. Well said, my friend.
Yeah, I love it. Love
Great.
It. Last question for you. If we could get the rights for it, mm-hmm. what would be the theme, the 80s song that would be the beginning of your podcast?
Oh my gosh. You know, you guys know I'm like an 80s baby. And oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say something with Michael Jackson. I think probably Party All the Time. There. Well, no, that's not Michael Jackson. That's singing Eddie Murphy, wasn't that? Or somebody before that. My bad. Wait. Party All the Time. Now,
that would be great.
That would be pretty funny. No, I'm trying what Michael's song. He has so many great hits, though. Like, there's so many good ones. I'll just say anything by Michael Jackson in the 80s. Upbeat.
It could be a medley.
Medley of Michael.
Yeah, I'm sure we could afford
Michael
that.
Medley, totally. Yeah, I'm sure.
A Michael medley of, of songs. So yeah, that's the best I got, man.
Good choice. Good choice.
Excellent.
Good choice. Yeah, love it. I was thrilled to meet Rashad because, like you, I knew his work for a while now, and part of that's because he's been showing work online and in galleries that I'm familiar with. So venues that I'm quite familiar with and connected with him in a more virtual way. But you mentioned that you have known him for a while and been following him. What's your history?
Yeah, I think it was Instagram, of all things, that I saw his work on. And it wasn't long after seeing it that I reached out to him because I had done an interview with him for Analog Forever. And it ran online. And I think it ran pretty early on. I almost want to say it was before the pandemic. I'm not even sure. I'd have to look it up. But it was early enough in his career that I don't think he had any representation at that point. Mm. And he wasn't really doing workshops. And he had Little Black Boy was his primary body of work. And then My America was a secondary like a supporting act to that work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very different because it's wet plate collodion. So it has a visually very different look to it. But he had done them both, but he was done to a point, but he has continued to work on them both as well. Since then, he has gotten obviously representation from a couple of galleries and he's doing workshops like crazy, talks like crazy. So there were a couple of things that I think that this episode really kind of drives home. One is that it isn't just that he's a talented photographer. He has a certain kind of, he has some like business smarts, right? There's a certain kind of acumen that he presents himself with when it comes to the work. I think that's a big deal, especially when it comes to working with a gallery, right?
Mm-hmm.
The galleries want to know that you're kind of in it for the long haul and that you can, you know, present yourself well as your work. You understand that this is a business.
Part of his success has been his ability to be able to market himself, whether he is collaborating with other people or not. He's a holistic photographer where he's able to say, oh, even the things I'm not necessarily that great at, let me get people to help me with those things. And so it's not so much of a struggle, but I'm presenting myself as a full picture. And I think that helps, like, for having the personality to be able to make an Instagram video that you are in, being able to present yourself to the world, the virtual world, like he does, and then teaching workshops, you know, all that stuff helps him with his personal career too.
Yeah, I would agree. And in fact, that is actually was this my second point. His social media presence is done very well. And he's got somebody that helps him out with that who's very good at it. You know, you got to get a guy. That's sometimes you
get
just
a person.
Got to get a guy.
Get a person.
Yeah. Get yourself somebody to help.
Get you some people.
If you can't do it, I mean.
Well, shit, we wouldn't, neither one of us would be able to do our projects without other people. You know what I mean?
Correct. Yeah. There's no way. Yeah. The things that I do by myself, I think they pale a little bit
sure.
in comparison.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I'll admit that, but you're not going to see that with Rashad. I mean, everything he does, it really comes across as top notch, and we're going to see him for a long time.
Yep.
I know that.
Top notch for sure. And one of the things that I mentioned while talking to him was the authenticity that he presents in all aspects. And I think that's not as easy for everyone to do, that people are that confident to just put themselves out there and be authentic and take that risk. Too. Some of his Instagram stuff is like he's promoting a workshop, but where he's at is completely different from what you're expecting at the workshop for, you know what I mean? So it's just an interesting way of marketing himself. Is like, you know, the workshop won't look anything like this and we won't be here, but you should come study with me.
Right. I mean, and that's, again, that it's that transparency about him that I think, like you said, it's very authentic and very, it's refreshing.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It reminds me of one of the very first things he ever said to me was that he's just a big photo nerd.
Mm.
You know, he doesn't shy away from that. I mean, there's an honesty to him that you don't always get from everybody.
Sure.
Not that other people are dishonest. It's just from him, it just kind of flows naturally.
Right. Well, it's just part of his personality. To sum up what I got from our talk, I love his, you know, the quality of his photography is impeccable. And I think in some ways I would call his style to me is like a photographer's photographer, because he's the things we mentioned earlier, the authenticity, the process of shooting large format or alternative process work, and then shooting family and shooting people, the experience of being a photographer and doing photographic work, but also, you know, just the images themselves, talking about family. And there's always a thread there that people can relate to when it comes to that theme specifically.
Yeah. He presents something that anybody can kind of grab onto.
Yeah. And legacy, I think, is very important. Mm-hmm. And then if, you know, being able to represent, you know, a visual representation of the Black experience, like he mentions, I think, you know, I think he does such a great job of it in such a almost, like, it's realistic, but it's also romantic in a way. And maybe that's just the nature of, you know, shooting large format, black and white.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's something that, I mean, that's one of the things that I gravitated to right away, because it made me admit something about myself basically being a white guy and dealing with the privilege that I have had all my life, to a certain degree, unbeknownst to me. But looking back, his work flips the light switch on for me and makes me realize that not everybody has had things presented to them as well as I have. I think that I've been very lucky. Mm-hmm. I think that I've been definitely privileged. And I think maybe many years ago, I would have said something like, well, no, I'm not privileged. I work really hard to get where I'm at. But it's beyond that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that his work has spelled that out for me and to a certain degree helped me understand myself and my own privilege, unlike anybody else has ever done before.
So what is it about the work that makes you feel that way?
You know what? It also addresses fatherhood, because I'm unlike you, you're a father. So I think that you understand this better than I had up until that point. And the fact that Little Black Boy is about his son, like, it bridges that gap between fatherhood and race and how you look out for your child and what you want for your child. Mm-hmm. It addresses the issue that knowing that he's Black and his son is Black, he may not have things as easy as other people. Like, he's going to hit some roadblocks in his life, and he wants to prepare his son for some of those certainly speed bumps along the way. Race is an issue in this country. And like I said, it helps me understand the grass isn't always greener on the other side, and that not everybody has the same life experience.
Yeah. That I have had. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and that's what, you know, a lot of great photography, it expands your mind to seeing things beyond your own little bubble and your own experience. And I think that's what's so fun about photography is, you know, and art too, and of course traveling and food and all that kind of stuff, the culture, being able to see different cultures. But, you know, for us, we're a bunch of photo geeks, so we do it in a we respond in a photographic way, you know, like, oh, well, okay, I get it, I can relate. But also, it's great to be able to relate to stuff, but also because you can relate and you can connect with it, you can learn from it at the same time. So you can, it opens your mind up to other experiences because there is a connection there for you.
Yeah, exactly. I relate, but he's expanding upon on how I relate.
Right.